This morning, America's First News starts right after this. Did you know that right now, GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit GEICO.com to learn more.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Esaias weakens. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka, on this Tuesday, August 4. Glad you're with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Hurricane Esaias made landfall last night in southern North Carolina, then earlier this morning was downgraded to a tropical storm, but dangers remain.
If Congress can't strike an agreement soon on another coronavirus relief bill, a White House official suggests the president may go it alone.
As Microsoft negotiates to buy the U.S. operations of TikTok, President Trump says the Treasury Department should get a slice of the sale price.
And how electric bills are spiking as more of us work and learn from home during coronavirus lockdowns.
Lots of people were forced to work from home. That trend has continued throughout the summer. Lots of kids are stuck home. Summer camps are closed. And so, you know, what do we have? We have really hot conditions, more people than ever staying at home, and that's driving up electricity costs.
Dalvin Brown at USA Today on utility bills spiking and how you can lessen the damage. Hurricane Esaias has made landfall along the border between North Carolina and South Carolina. When the storm reached Ocean Isle Beach in North Carolina at around 11 last night, it was packing winds of up to 85 miles an hour. Earlier this morning, it weakened to a tropical storm. More than 250,000 customers were without power in North Carolina. A storm surge warning was in effect from Little River Inlet to Cape Fear, North Carolina. Here's North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper.
Never drive through flooded roads. As little as 18 inches can sweep a car away. We've lost too many lives after these storms because of people trying to drive through water.
Esaias could bring heavy rains too, up to 8 inches in spots as it moves up the coast, and could produce flash flooding across portions of the eastern Carolinas and mid-Atlantic, even in the northeast U.S. Eastern New York and western New England, by the way, can expect 2 to 4 inches of rain with maximums of 6 inches in some areas. Top negotiators in Washington say they've made progress in talks on a new coronavirus relief bill. In addition, the White House has now floated the idea of President Trump acting alone if no deal is reached. A key sticking point remains what to do about the $600 per week enhanced unemployment benefit, a lifeline for the tens of millions of Americans furloughed or laid off during pandemic lockdowns. Those benefits, which are in addition to state jobless benefits, expired on Friday. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell.
The Democrat leader is still refusing to let struggling Americans get another dime unless he gets a massive tax cut for wealthy people in blue states. It has nothing to do with the coronavirus.
Meanwhile, Stephen Moore, a member of Mr. Trump's Economic Recovery Task Force, told Reuters that the president could act unilaterally and defer worker payments on payroll taxes. He said such a move would inject up to $300 billion into the U.S. economy. The tax payments, by the way, fund Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. President Trump says he was ready to approve a purchase of the U.S. operations of the Chinese video sharing app TikTok, but only if the government receives, quote, a lot of money in exchange. Microsoft hopes to acquire TikTok's business in the U.S. The White House had been pushing for a sale to U.S. owners, citing national security risks that the Chinese government could exploit the personal data that the app collects.
The United States should get a very large percentage of that price because we're making it possible. Without us, you know, I use the expression, it's like the landlord and the tenant. And without the lease, the tenant doesn't have the value. Well, we're sort of, in a certain way, the lease.
Carl Tobias, law professor at the University of Richmond, questioned the potential use of presidential power to force a payment to the government, telling the Wall Street Journal that taking a cut of a business deal that it has helped negotiate would be completely unorthodox. Microsoft, by the way, sees the deal as an opportunity to absorb a new universe of 100 million or so U.S. users, most of them young. It's 11 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business, but you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Dell supports America's entrepreneurs during Small Business Month with all you need to office anywhere. Save up to 45% on computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Upgrade to new modern devices with Windows 10. Plus, save on top-brand tech while enjoying free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the tech that's just right. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/smallbusinessdeals.
Thanks for spending part of your Tuesday with us. When unemployment soared this spring, at the start of coronavirus lockdowns, credit card debt and delinquencies were widely expected to surge as struggling households borrowed more to make ends meet. Instead, amid the deepest economic crisis since the Great Depression, the opposite happened. Credit card debt in the U.S. and other advanced economies has fallen. Here to explain what happened is Matthew Dalton, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. He joins us from his post in Paris. Matt, what happened?
When unemployment soared in the spring as the lockdowns came into effect, both in the U.S. but also in Europe, that credit quality was really going to suffer, particularly credit from consumers. Credit card debt was going to go up as people borrowed to get by, and that they were going to be increasingly late on their credit card payments. But the stimulus that the U.S. and also many other advanced economies that they put in place has been really big and to this point quite effective in reducing the stress, the financial stress on households. And one of the things that's resulted in is people using the money to pay down their credit card debt. There are many fewer people who are late on their credit card payments. And even demand for new loans from consumer loans from even from places like pawn shops is way down. Part of this is people not having the opportunity to spend their money in other ways, traveling and you know, going to restaurants less, that kind of thing, because of the restrictions. When you can combine that with the huge amount of money that's been flowing from the government into the economy, people have been able to get themselves out of some credit card debt. It's been remarkable.
That is remarkable. How much debt has actually been reduced to this point?
Well, in the U.S., there was it's by about $100 billion worth of credit card debt has been cut from the national credit card bill. That's about a 10% decrease. In other countries that where there's a lot of credit card debt use, mainly the Anglophone countries like Canada, the UK, and Australia, credit card debt has fallen even more. It's down 14% in the UK, down 11% in Canada, down 17% in Australia. It's all kind of the same dynamic. The government has really stepped in to ease the pain, and people have more cash from not doing things like traveling and stuff like that. There's a lot of cash out there, and it's being used to service credit card debt.
We're speaking with Matthew Dalton, Paris correspondent at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Consumers Flush with Stimulus Money, Shun Credit Card Debt. Okay, so without government stimulus checks, if, say, we don't get a vaccine anytime soon and the economy continues to struggle, could this trend go the opposite direction?
Definitely. So the weekly, the federal $600 weekly unemployment benefit expired last week. They are, trying to negotiate a new plan, a new stimulus provision, something that would replace that. It's unclear if they're going to have an agreement. And if that doesn't pass, everybody in the financial services industry expects that credit card delinquencies, credit card debt will both rise because that $600 a week benefit has been a lifeline for lots of people, for the nearly 18 million people who are unemployed right now. It's been a huge boon for them, and about two-thirds of people who are receiving that benefit are now earning more in their jobs than they were, are earning more in unemployment than they were in their jobs.
Yeah.
So, if that expires, it's going to be a huge drag on the economy and a huge problem for the credit quality of millions of Americans.
Thanks, Matt. Matthew Dalton, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, based in Paris. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Rasa Kay.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Tropical storm watches and warnings are in effect for heavy rain and flooding from Georgia to Maine as Isaias slogs north after a direct hit in the Carolinas overnight. North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper says the weakening storm will still pack a punch.
Stay inside during the heavy winds and watch for tornadoes.
The storm could bring the strongest winds to New York City since Superstorm Sandy almost 8 years ago.
Number two.
A massive wildfire burning in Riverside and San Bernardino counties in California has scorched more than 26,000 acres and is barely contained. Over 2,000 firefighters are battling the Apple Fire.
Number three.
Citing a coronavirus transmission rate nearly double what it was a month ago, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy is changing course on indoor capacity.
We are retightening the restriction on indoor gatherings, which until further notice are now limited to 25% of a room's capacity, but with a maximum of 25 persons. That's down from 100.
He specifically cited recent indoor house parties as adding to the increased transmission rate. Michigan health officials have ordered widespread testing for agricultural workers following 11 reported outbreaks at processing plants around the state. The Federal Aviation Administration has detailed a wide-ranging list of changes to Boeing's ill-fated 737 MAX planes before they can fly again commercially. Proposed changes include updating flight control software, revising crew procedures, and rerouting internal wiring. The 737 MAX has been grounded since March 2019 following two fatal crashes. Weather is considered a factor in yesterday's crashes of three hot air balloons near Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Witnesses say the wind shifted abruptly and passenger baskets started tipping before the balloons went down, injuring as many as 20 people. A repaved stretch of highway in Oroville, California is the first highway in the country to be paved in part with recycled plastic, the equivalent of roughly 150,000 plastic bottles per mile of the three-lane road. Technisoil is the startup that engineered the new type of pavement, which it claims resists potholes and cracking and can last 2 to 3 times longer than standard asphalt.
Wow. Resist potholes? Impressive.
From old plastic bottles?
Yeah. I'm in. How about that? Thank you, Rasa. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. The T-shirt is a menswear staple. Unfortunately, the basic tee we love has its issues, right? Shrinkage, bacon neck, fading, and stretching, to name a few. But the modern take on the classic T-shirt from Cuts Clothing has completely changed the game. With their amazingly soft, custom-engineered Pika Pro fabric, Cuts T-shirts have an athletic, tailored-looking fit that's comfortable anywhere, from a day in the office to a night on the town and everything in between. I have to say, I love my Cuts T-shirts. I've worn them casually with shorts and sandals, but also under my suit jacket in more professional settings. They're one of the most comfortable, durable, and fashionably flexible shirts I've ever owned. Plus, they're pre-shrunk, wrinkle-free, and hold their shape over time, no matter what style you prefer. That's why Cuts is the only shirt worth wearing. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. Again, cutsclothing.com/Gordon. Hey, thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Tuesday. Americans are navigating many pandemic-related financial issues during the recession, right? Job losses, restrictive rental agreements, and slashed 401k contributions, to name a few. Making matters worse, data suggests many are also seeing significant rises in their utility and electric bills each month due to remote work. Here to explain the trend with tips to lower your bill is Dalvin Brown, consumer tech reporter at USA Today. Dalvin, set this up.
So if we think back to March, lots of people were forced to work from home. That trend has continued throughout the summer. Lots of kids are stuck home. Summer camps are closed. And so, you know, what do we have? We have really hot conditions, more people than ever staying at home, and that's driving up electricity costs. So I spoke to several people who were saying that, you know, their bills were higher, not only higher because of the summer, but also just higher than they'd ever been. And we quickly realized that it was because of, you know, working from home. You're plugging up your laptop, you're plugging up your computer, you're using a lot more electronics a lot more often than you ever have before, if your workplace shifted, or if you're on lockdown. So that was sort of what we uncovered. And I spoke also to some energy companies that were able to say, yeah, this is really a thing.
Wow. All right. So the guy opened the story with, I mean, his bill was up like $150 or something over last year.
Yeah. So if you really, you know, like I said, if you think about it, especially if you're in a family, right, where, you know, usually during the summer, no one's home for 8 hours a day and you turn off the AC and no one's using the fridge, but all of a sudden everyone's home and everyone's plugged in and, you know, the AC is blasting. Right. Yeah. I mean, some people saw double.
Wow. All right. So if the energy companies are giving some tips here on how to kind of manage the shock, what are they saying?
Yeah. So obviously, you know, Americans are dealing with a lot financially right now. So there's things that they can do that don't cost any money, such as turning down the temperature in your fridge, or, you know, unplugging electronics that use vampire energy, or, you know, they use a little bit of electricity even when they're turned off. Just doing those small things can help. But, you know, if you do have the resources to go out and buy things, energy efficient light bulbs or energy efficient appliances should help get those bills down at least a little bit. For until, you know, the end of the pandemic, or at least until the weather cools down a little bit.
Yeah. Right, because on top of everything, we had like a stretch of the heat wave. Definitely where I am in the Northeast. I don't know, maybe the rest of the East Coast too. It's been hot just to complicate things. The vampire energy that you mentioned, leaving something plugged in while not on, or maybe it's your iPhone charger and it's not even plugged into the iPhone, right? It still saps just a tiny bit of energy.
Yeah, just a tiny bit. And if you really think about, you know, if you live in a house and you have, you know, television still plugged in every room, other appliances plugged in that you're not even using, they're sucking up a little bit of electricity. And then over time, you know, over the course of a month, that can add up to dollar bills.
Thanks, Dalvin. Dalvin Brown from USA Today. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles, since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning.
Exclusive stories and unique perspectives. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending Tuesday, August 4 with us. Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay, who's filling in for Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Isaias made landfall in North Carolina last night, now targets the Mid-Atlantic. A new 90-minute COVID test to debut in the UK next week. In the Michigan primary today, first-term Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib faces a tight race.
Events in Dayton, Ohio today will mark the one-year anniversary of a mass shooting. 13 coronavirus infections for the St. Louis Cardinals. The newest book in the Twilight series is out today. And the new state Supreme Court judge who took her oath on the run. That story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by Grainger. For all the ones who get it done, there's Grainger, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, plus 24/7 customer support and product specialists always ready to answer any question. Call or visit Grainger.com. With the fall college semester just a few weeks away, the COVID-19 pandemic means there's no consensus about how college campuses are going to open and what they will look like if they do. There are as many plans as there are institutions, and their guidebooks are being written in pencil, of course, leaving families and students in limbo. Doug Belkin, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, says at stake are the health and well-being of more than 20 million students, faculty, and staff, as well as billions of dollars in revenue. Doug, not long ago, two-thirds of schools were anticipating in-person instruction. Now I think it's less than half.
It's dropped to less than half, and I think it's logical to assume that that will continue to decline as the virus just continues to take these swings that are either unpredictable or the folks who thought they could get their heads around stopping it or preparing for it are throwing up their hands.
Even as you said in the story, reopenings aren't the same for schools that do plan to have in-person instruction.
Yeah, I mean, things are going to look so different this year. The number of kids on campuses are going to be smaller. The dormitories are going to be spaced out. The kids are almost universally going to be wearing masks. A lot of the teachers won't be in the teaching. They won't be in the classrooms. They'll be teaching virtually, even if the kids are there. There's going to be a lot of students who are at a college, sitting in their dorm rooms, taking classes online because their professors won't be in the classrooms. And then in some cases, there'll be professors in the classrooms, but they'll be behind, you know, plexiglass or something. So it's not going to look like it did last year.
Yeah. I was impressed too by the difference in the way schools were approaching it. You referenced Texas A&M, right? They've set this threshold of 100 positive tests a day, and then they rethink things. And then you got Bowdoin College up in Maine is going to try to conduct 85,000 tests over the fall semester. They're just all over the place.
That's Colby. Yeah, they're going crazy to test everybody and everything. And then, you know, some of what's happening is that these schools are announcing plans to do these massive rollouts of tests, and then they're finding out they can't get the tests in the numbers that they anticipated, or that the turnaround time for the tests is much slower than they anticipated because the infrastructure for the testing is still being ramped up. Some of this is sort of a case of the best laid plans bumping into the hard realities of just sort of an overburdened system.
We're speaking with Doug Belkin, education reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Back to College Plans Devolve into a Jumble of Fast-Changing Rules. And just because a school has announced one thing doesn't mean they're not going to change it in the next couple of days, right?
Right. I mean, we use Spelman as an example. They said they were going to have everybody back in school on July 1st. 19 days later, they said, nope, sorry about that. We got it wrong. The Georgia's had a real swarm of COVID cases, and the circumstances changed. What's not really clear yet is, so you've got a situation where folks are going to open up or not open up and do it in person. Or not, and then if they have the kids on campus, when will they decide that it's no longer safe to have kids on campus? These metrics are being thought through now, but it's not entirely clear. At least the schools aren't making it entirely clear how long they'll keep the kids there if this thing spikes.
Yeah, I mean, it's all a big revenue game, so to speak, right?
There's billions, tens of billions of dollars at stake. So that's in the forefront of a lot of the folks' minds. And some of these schools are in really tough positions. You know, they need the revenue. And from the perspective of a student sitting in your mom's, in your childhood bedroom, taking a class isn't worth the price that you were willing to pay to go to this school. The teachers argue, well, we're teaching the same classes, we're working very hard, but that's not the experience that the students are having, and so they may not be game to pay. So if they don't enroll, then the schools don't have the money. The schools that don't have large endowments, depend on that money to keep the lights on. So there are existential questions at stake for some of these universities and colleges.
Man, these schools, they don't have kind of formal CDC guidance here, do they?
No, the state rules have been more informative than the CDC. You know, they've offered sort of general guidelines, but the governors are making more demands. And, you know, in some cases, they're saying to, you know, if Massachusetts, for instance, has done a nice job suppressing this stuff, but they're going to be having kids coming in from around the country. So they're going to mandate, and this is true in a lot of New England and New York states, in the Northeast, they're going to mandate quarantine for some of these students if they come in from hotspots around the country. So where do the schools need to find a place for these students to quarantine in isolation while they're either that or get a test?
All right, thanks, Doug. Doug Belkin, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. 19 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Dell supports America's entrepreneurs during Small Business Month with all you need to office anywhere. Save up to 45% on computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Upgrade to new modern devices with Windows 10. Plus, save on top-brand tech while enjoying free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the tech that's just right. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/smallbusinessdeals.
Hey, thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Tuesday. It's time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know that people occasionally see religious figures appear in nature or in their food, but what about NBA Hall of Famers? They too can apparently respawn as food, as one viral photo on Twitter is showing. The pic shows what people claim is a tomato that looks a lot like Boston Celtics legend Larry Bird. The tomato has grown in such a way that it looks like it has a human face, including two of Bird's trademark features, his nose and a smirking mouth. Sadly, Bird has yet to comment on his fruit doppelganger, but that didn't stop others from commenting on the pic as it trended on Twitter over the weekend. Some were nostalgic with both the Bird resemblance and its trending harkening back to a simpler time on social media. Others vowing that they would search their gardens for a tomato that looks like Magic Johnson so the two could live side by side for Tomaternity.
Also known as Tomato Eternity.
I suppose that's where we're going with that. But I mean, it helped with the picture that they put a hat on it. Not that Bird is known for wearing hats,
yeah,
but it looks a lot more human when they put a little tiny yep. hat on the tomato. It does look an awful lot like him.
And it does look like his mouth in such a way that he has sort of like the downturn lips.
Right.
Right. He looks like he's in an almost perpetual sad face.
Right.
And the one side is slightly lower than the other. That to me like sort of captures it.
Yes. So it looks like he...
And the eyes are small.
Yeah. 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 It looks like him, Bird, when he was a coach. That's okay. Sort of the expression that he had on the sidelines. It seemed like all the time. He always looked like he was unhappy, you know, pretty much 24/7.
Tomaternity.
Yeah, Tomaternity. And, you know, some people always seem to get bitten by bugs in the summer and they claim that they must be tastier than the rest of us. One guy could have a legitimate case for that claim, but in a much more dangerous way. Yahoo News says Justin Stuller was on a trip with his family for some swimming, fishing, and lobstering in the Florida Keys when he was bitten by a shark. The bite reportedly resulted in Stuller receiving 24 stitches and left him walking with a small limp. And while this was his first shark bite, it wasn't the first time an animal with large teeth sunk its teeth into him. Before the shark bite, he already had scars on his leg from being bitten by an alligator.
Jeez.
Oh, and another time he was bitten by a spider severely enough that he has a scar from that on his leg as well. Undeterred by all these animals snacking on his legs, Stuller was back on the water the next day after being stitched up, though he had to stay in the boat, which made him madder than being bitten in the first place.
Can't get an infection.
Yeah,
I've been bitten by a shark, an alligator, and stung by a spider so severely it left a scar.
Yeah.
But he can't go in the water because there's a risk of infection with your stitches.
Right.
Okay.
Right. I wonder what the odds are on that of being bitten by, you know, especially the shark, which sharks don't bite a lot of people, and shark and alligator, you know, at the same time.
For him?
The same year.
For him?
Yeah.
I think the odds are very high because apparently he does these types of activities.
He doesn't spend a lot of time on land.
Yeah, if Justin asks you to go away for like an adventurous weekend, your answer should be no. 13 minutes in front of the hour.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
If you're contacted about possible exposure to the coronavirus, make sure it's legit. Scammers are masquerading as contact tracers. The tracer's job is to help contain the pandemic by reaching out to people who may be spreading the coronavirus. Now, there's no centralized testing for the U.S., and procedures and names of agencies doing tracing vary. You might be contacted by a state or county health department by phone or text, but you don't have to talk to the caller at that moment. Take a breath. If a caller says they're a contact tracer from a health department, take their name, hang up, and then call the department yourself to verify. Look up the info online. A legitimate tracing text would simply inform you to expect a call. Also, don't click on links in texts. They might contain malware. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Rasa Kay.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Tropical storm Isaias is on the move north from the Carolinas, causing high winds and potentially dangerous storm surges. North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper is warning against flash floods.
Never drive through flooded roads. As little as 18 inches can sweep a car away. We've lost too many lives after these storms because of people trying to drive through water.
The Mid-Atlantic states will see effects of the storm in the Delaware Bay, Tidal Potomac River, Chesapeake Bay, and Long Island Sound, and heavy rain from Isaias will reach New Hampshire and Maine tomorrow morning.
Number two.
Thousands of people evacuated ahead of the Apple Fire, straddling Riverside and San Bernardino counties and charring more than 32 square miles of dry brush and timber since first starting as two smaller fires Friday. Officials say it's still only about 5% contained.
Number three.
The Florida Department of Health reports two teenagers have died from COVID-19 complications, bringing the total number of minors who've died in relation to the virus in Florida to seven, the latest victims between the ages of 14 and 17. Europe is dealing with COVID flares in Norway. At least 41 people tested positive on a cruise ship, and there are fears disembarking passengers could have spread it in dozens of towns along the country's coast. England is expanding mandatory use of face masks and resuming some restrictions as its chief medical officer warns it's reached the limits of reopening. In an emotional video, U.S. District Judge Esther Salas speaks about her son's brutal killing last month by an anti-feminist lawyer who posed as a delivery man at their New Jersey doorstep and decries what she calls lack of privacy and protection for federal judges.
The monster knew where I lived and where and what church we attended, and had a complete dossier on me and my family. At the moment, there is nothing we can do to stop it, and that is unacceptable.
Salas' husband also critically injured in that shooting. Marijuana dispensaries seeing a business boom. Politico speculates illegal marijuana sellers are having trouble maintaining their clientele during the pandemic. Scared a bad experience from illegal pot might result in a hospital visit, and skittish about letting sellers into their homes, buyers have pivoted to legal marijuana shops.
All right. Thank you, Rasa. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. A Wisconsin woman took a break from her 100-mile ultra marathon run at mile 35 to be sworn in as a justice of the state Supreme Court. Jill Karofsky was joined for about 5 miles of her run by Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Dallet, and the pair paused on the lawn of Dot's Tavern in Basco, Wisconsin, to hold a swearing-in ceremony for Ms. Karofsky's 10-year term on the court. She continued her run following the ceremony and completed the 100-mile ultramarathon on Sunday with a final time of about 34 hours. The justice had been registered for an officially sanctioned 100-mile run to take place this summer. She decided to run the route anyway when the event was canceled due to the coronavirus. Ms. Karofsky, a former high school tennis champ who has completed two Ironman competitions, signed up for a 100-mile run that was scheduled the same day that the Supreme Court's term starts. She plans to eventually hold an investiture like other justices, but decided on something different for her swearing in. That'll do it for this hour. For Rasa Kay, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Did you know that right now GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more.